pictured this. Recording studio somewhere far, far away.
You buggers!
The Mary Whitehouse Experience. Good, well, we've had one letter since last week's show. It says, I loved every minute of it. It was fantastic. You had me rolling about on the floor. And that's from Commander Timothy Lawrence to Princess Anne.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
Wow! Detectives are hunting the killers of a man found with a pigeon stuffed in his mouth. If you have any information about the murder of Mr. Oswald Ole Topal Topal Stepanyuk, you could win a Community Action Trust reward. Which brings us finally to good news. Following the arrest last week of a leading gang boss, a Community Action Trust reward goes to Mr. Oswald Ole Topal Topal Stepanyuk.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience. Wow!
In the name of the holy vengeance of Islam, and with the glorious salutations of Mohammed on you, I abjure all Muslims to take up the vengeful sword of Allah and destroy all those associated with the obscene and blasphemous book, Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley.
And so the latest piece of literature to outrage the Iranians burst onto the scene. Weeks of argument and international conflict were to follow. But what was it about J.R. Hartley's manual on fresh and midwater angling that so enraged the Ayatollah? We spoke to Jeff Shepherd, editor of Angling Times and a devout Shiite fundamentalist.
Well, the thing is, the Ayatollah, bless him, he's made it very clear that it doesn't hold with Hartley's preference for modern snap reel casting rods. He prefers to use an old solid 14-foot tinch pole.
And this is for solid Quranic reasons?
No, it's for extra leverage.
Things came to a head when, as he left for Tehran, the Iranian charge d'affaires made a series of public fishing innuendos as a slur on the British angling establishment.
I'm pulling out my tackle. Here is my large rod. At the end of my large rod is my fly. Goodbye.
Finally, the British government took its most decisive step. They sent Captain Birdseye into the Persian Gulf.
Oh, fish, fish, and young boys and girls, fish, fish, and boys and girlies. I've got a lot of fish and young boys and girls, and they've all signed consent forms.
The blowing up of Captain Birdseye's ship did go some way towards restoring Anglo-Iranian relations. Where, meanwhile, was J.R. Hartley? Well, in that nice house that he shares with his daughter. But soon, he was to have to go into hiding and do without all those things which he held so dear. His fishing books, his copy of the Yellow Pages, and his 15 different pairs of incontinence pants. This interview was recorded just before he went into hiding.
Now, people have said, Mr. Hartley, that you deliberately inserted the section about snap reel casting rods, knowing that it would incite the Ayatollah and therefore create publicity for your book.
Who's been saying that?
Roald Dahl.
I refuse to be vilified by a type of Indian food.
Are you going to apologise to the millions of Muslims who are at present baying for your blood?
No, actually, I refuse to be vilified by a type of Indian food.
Are you going to apologise to the millions of Muslims who are at present baying for your blood?
No, actually, I'm going to put an advert in the Quran that says, "The Ayatollah is a puff." Of course I'm bloody going to apologise.
And where are you going to hide?
19 Berry Lane, Codicut. Oh, bugger.
Iranian terrorists, outraged at their inability to find Mr. Hartley, decided to turn their wrath onto bookshops stocking copies of Fly Fishing. But they couldn't find any. At first.
Hello? Do you have a copy of Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley? Oh, you do? That's marvellous.
Good old Shiite fundamentalism. It's just there for the nasty things in life.
This is the skint video experience. Music is the food of love, with a salmonella, basically. After Madonna's sacking from the latest Pepsi advert, here's a sneak preview of Grace Jones' new Coke ad.
Look right up my hookah, baby. I ain't got no cavities.
In the week that UEFA allowed British clubs back into Europe, we'd like to talk about football songs. The football club nearest to our hearts is our local team, our home team, Millwall Football Club, who used to have a problem, of course, with hooliganism.
But not anymore, because they've now been sponsored by a very aware and right-on council, Lewisham.
And, of course, there's been a few changes. For a start, there's a creche at every home game, and this has confused the fans beyond belief. They get the programme out and go, here, look at that, right? A creche. Who's he, a French player, mate? Is he or what?
With a soap, lead and quaff. Anyway, in keeping with the new right-on image, Millwall felt that they should have a new football chant.
I mean, the old football chants were horrible, really. Sexist, racist a lot. So we have a commission to write this, the world's first non-racist, non-sexist football song for Millwall Football Club.
We are trying to change our image. No longer will we be the dirty den. As we chew our half-time veggie burgers at the Mandela end. We hate all forms of oppression. Whether on land or sea or Leicester, we ain't all macho aggression. Except when we play Leeds, Millwall, Millwall. We don't kill animals to make our balls. We are becoming more aware environmentally. That's why our petrol bombs are all lead free. 2, 4, 6, 8, more brown rice on my plate. 3, 5, 7, 9, our players all work flexi time.
There's some real crowd trouble here. Someone's thrown a banana on the pitch and even worse, it's South African.
We don't have a bite with me. It's the international we serve. And true to our ideology, we won't play on the right wing. We don't stereotype our opponents with obscene chants and jeers. Our team is non-competitive. They've been playing that way for years. And if anybody gets excited, come here, and really blows their top, you're dead. They can get rid of their bad karma, man. A non-violent workshop. Millwall, Millwall. Cold Blow Lane will never be the same. So we won't be sick as parrots as we munch organic carrots. For football is a funny old game. Get off me, Sawyer. Football is a funny old game.
And now, the historico-political experience. This week, Mr. Paddy Ashdown, whose entry in Who's Who reads, Not Me, came out with some strong criticism of Parliament.
Parliament,
he said,
is a disgrace. It runs itself like an arcane 18th century institution.
This from a man who until very recently was a member of the Liberal Party. In any case, to write off Parliament as an 18th century institution is absurd. It's a 13th century institution.
Parliament was originally invented because medieval kings needed money to wage crusades against overseas infidels. Nowadays, this is known as conservative foreign policy.
There is no doubt that parliamentary procedure does retain a lot of obscure relics from the past, most of them safely tucked away in the House of Lords.
Take, for example, Black Rod. Originally, he patrolled the buildings with his brother Dino. But he went off in the late 19th century to start up on his own. Black Rod's duties consist in banging a 3-foot wooden pole against the locked doors and chanting the time-honoured words.
Who have you got in there, Moynihan?
Many Commons traditions date back to great parliamentary struggles of the past. For example, the furore when Henry VIII wanted to privatise the monasteries. Selling off the church land proved highly controversial, despite the famous slogan, "If you see Brother Sid, tell him." Dreamed up by Cardinal Wolsey of Wolsey, Cranmer and Saatchi, who also helped Henry VIII to power with their famous poster, "Henry VII isn't working."
Once a year, on St. Lawson's Day, Lord Cleftico of Nuneaton traditionally hops over Westminster Bridge carrying a sheep. This is nothing to do with ancient tradition, he's just a pervert. The Lord Chancellor sits on a woolsack to remind us of the importance of the wool trade in the past. Either that or Preparation H is too expensive.
It is, of course, officially the Queen's Parliament. Once a year, she reads out the government's policy at the state's opening of Parliament.
Pray silence for Her Majesty the Queen.
Do I really have to read this? It's as dull as one of Anne's letters.
The Merry White House Experience. Wow!
For me, the greatest impressionist of all time and the most underrated was Johnny Morris.
Now, Charlie the chimpanzee hasn't been feeling very well lately. Have you, Charlie?
No, I haven't, Johnny.
Now, please go crazy for someone who I found to be a real animal in bed. Mark Thomas.
Hello, everyone. This is the bit in the show where I come amongst you and discuss a topic of the week. The discussion point we're going to do today, children, is, well, the thing that caught me most is perhaps the Pamela Bordes stuff. Mainly because the press just hound her. And so this sparked off, especially with all the scandal stuff, the film coming out now, it sparked off a thing about prostitution. So I thought we'd have a little discussion about that. So we're going to start by asking just the audience here in the studio, how many of you have actually visited a prostitute? No one. About 150 men and not one of them. Have we got any prostitutes here tonight as well? The thing that actually got us into the prostitution was that I was actually talking to a prostitute recently, and I paid her to talk to her, because it's cheaper than British Telecom chat line. Actually, that's brilliant, isn't it? The fact that all these lovely blue-rinsed biddies in Croydon and all that who are pro-moral majority and pro-privatisation are getting dividends from BT's porn lines. But the thing this prostitute reminded me was the fact that in Italy, in their parliament in Italy, they've elected a woman who used to be a porno star, which is great. In Italy, representing the workers is this woman who used to be in the sex industry. What do? We just elected the clients. It'd be brilliant if they did legalise prostitution, because just for the sheer joy of watching the entire House of Lords awake.
Good Lord, they're talking about Mitzi.
Well, it would be brilliant if they did actually legalise it, because prostitutes are workers like any other group of workers. If they legalised prostitution, then they'd form a union. Then they'd go on strike like they did in Paris in 1975. And then that means with the workers on strike, we're going to get the Employment Secretary, Fowler, on television going, "The brothels of Britain will stay open." As usual, kind of like the main support from the Labour Party to the striking workers is going to be the Bishop of Durham. If it did become legal, then there'd be a whole range of new entrepreneurs rushing into it. The marketing possibilities are just incredible. It's like you could have Richard Branson opening up a new mega store. You could have all sorts of schemes like group discounts or student concessions. Gift vouchers, Happy Father's Day. You could have, or Mother's Day, Happy Mother's Day. It comes but once a year, but twice if you go to Raymond Gigolo's. So I just think, I'm going to come amongst you now and ask you some of your opinions. Have we got anyone who'd like to offer an opinion first of all? Let's see, have you got anyone here?
I actually don't agree with legalising prostitution, because then I'd have to start paying tax.
That's brilliant. What about the health benefits? Does anyone think there'll be any health benefits from legalising prostitution?
Well, if you catch anything, you'll know where you didn't catch it.
Why is that?
Well, because they have health checks and all that, don't they?
Yeah, they'd have health checks. That would be brilliant, wouldn't it? No more embarrassed businessmen going, "Well, I think I caught it off a toilet seat." We had someone's hand up over there.
I just think if it was legalised and it was advertised, you could get Bernard Matthews on with his turkeys and other outlet for his turkeys.
Going for laughs on that one. Not quite getting them, but possibly a rip from Bernard. I tell you what, to finish off, we'll take a vote here. I want everyone who thinks that we should legalise prostitution to shout, yeah.
Yes.
All those who think we shouldn't. Yeah. You're a bit confused over there, aren't you? Shout for both. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. I think we've got the government quaking in their boots. Thank you very much. Good night.
And now the character assassination experience. This week we examine Derek Jameson. Why is he famous? Why do the tabloids insist that we love him? And why has he never ever brushed his teeth?
Jameson was born in 1893, aged 52. He emerged from his mother's womb wearing a pair of flared Marks and Spencer's front-pocketed trousers. His first words were,
"Morning, morning, morning."
He was found 2 days later on a doorstep in Harpenden.
Derek went on to become editor in his time of The Star, The Express and The News of the World. In his autobiography, Touched by Angels, he explains,
"By all the rules, I should have become a criminal. Instead, I took myself off to Fleet Street."
What one has to quibble with there is the word instead. Jameson seems to mistrust intellectuals, a trait he shares with Adolf Hitler, the Khmer Rouge and Big Daddy. Perhaps he thinks his bluff, honest common sense cuts through the arty-farty pretensions of those around him.
So, Derek, do you think the Middle East conflict can be solved by an independent Palestinian state on the West Bank?
I don't know. You'll have to ask my old landlady in Acne about that. She's been taking the washing off the line for 120 years, and she's never missed a royal wedding. She may not have had a posh education like some people, but I'll tell you one thing. She's really stupid.
Derek, of course, sees himself as a working-class hero, the sort of man who can sing a good old Cockney song about good old Cockney values.
I love the Queen and Princess Di, I blame it on the unions. I love the Queen and Princess Di, I've never been a poofter. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I live in London. Oh, tits, tits, knockers, knockers, tits, 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 knockers, 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 tits, tits, knockers, knockers, tits, 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 knockers, knockers, knockers. Right, that's the editorial done.
Derek, of course, is lovably incorrigible, which is another way of saying he's a tosspot of the first order.
Four, four, hi, hi, ha, ha.
A recording there of Derek's now famous interview with Selena Scott.
And next week on the character assassination experience, we'll be looking at Kenneth Baker. We'll be asking why he appeared on the British Rock and Pop Awards when his most successful record is closing 10 schools in 2 days. Why is he Secretary of Education when he's only got one CSE, and that stands for Crap Secretary of Education? And why does he wash his hair in Duckham's motor oil? Hello, and welcome to the Agony Aunt Experience. I'm Jo Brand. I'm overweight, I drink and smoke too much, and my idea of a healthy diet is as much lard as I can force down my throat through the hole of a ring donut. So I'm not actually that well qualified to be an agony aunt, but at least I know how most of the people feel that write into these magazines. Like this poor dear who wrote into Bella magazine. "Dear Bella, I desperately want to be thin like Kylie Minogue." Well, I suppose looking like Kylie Minogue does have its advantages. Granddad can use you to clean his pipe. And I suppose there'll always be a job for you modelling runner beans as they grow. And bear in mind that if you look like Kylie Minogue, you'll have to go out with an Australian man. Only acceptable Australian man I've ever met or been out with is Skippy. And next we have a heart-rending problem from Best magazine, which I must say had me in tears. Dear Best, I recently went to a party at the home of my husband's boss. To my horror, his wife was wearing the same dress. Well, in these days of famine, violence and the threat of nuclear war, I suppose this is a pretty devastating problem, isn't it? Well, if I were you, Mrs. Same Dress as the Boss's Wife, I'd look at a newspaper for a change and put something a little bit more important into your brain before you do any more damage to it. And the next problem particularly interested me. Dear Bella, I'm age 30, all of my friends are married, and I'm lonely. Now, the reason this letter interested me so much was that I wrote it. This sort of problem needs some lateral thinking. See it not as your problem, but as your friend's problem. And send for my handy leaflet, How to Break Up a Friend's Marriage. Failing this, of course, you can always become a nun and get married to God. I know that a nun's life isn't much fun, but at least you'll get a decent dinner every night. You'll be able to do a pretty good impersonation of a bat. And finally, solve that distressing problem once and for all of turning up at a party dressed the same as the boss's.
Now, the hunt is on for a blonde, unshaven man, round about 30, with a husky voice and a receding hairline. If you answer to this description, please contact the police immediately, as they've never been any good without you, Sting.
Right, now it's time for the punchline experience. Before the show, the studio audience were asked to come up with a punchline to the following joke. What will Commander Lawrence write as a PS on his next letter to Princess Anne? Now, we've collected up all the punchlines on little bits of paper, which I have in my hand. I'm going to read some of them now, and all the best ones will win a prize, a book of BBC matches. So, here we go. What will Commander Lawrence write as a PS on his next letter to Princess Anne? PS, this must stop before someone finds out. Well, that was by Brian of Skint Video, actually, so... He's off the show next week. What will Commander Lawrence write as a PS on his next letter to Princess Anne? PS, bloody luck that I didn't sign with my real name, Lionel Blair. And that's from Commander Lawrence. Now, it's actually from someone called Thea Sam, who has two first names. So that's the best one so far. What will Commander Lawrence write as a PS on his next letter to Princess Anne? PS, I'll use a French letter next time. They don't leak as much. Yeah, that's right. Nicholas Markwell gets a round of applause. P.S. I would do anything to get on the front page of the Sun. When are you going to be on page 3? Oh, dear. M. Yard, who's just a complete pillock. P.S. You look like a horse. And that's by me, actually, so I win for that one. Right, the green light's gone on, so that means that's it. What do you think was the best one? I can't even remember them now. Can anyone remember them? Was there a particularly good one? The French letter and the leak one. All right, that got a round of applause. The Lionel Blair one was better. Got a bit of a row going on here. But I think it was by from someone called Mike Yarwood or something, I seem to remember. What was his actual name?
Mike Yarden.
Okay, a box of BBC matches goes to Mike Yarden, and a round of applause, please.
Now it's time for our comedy series, All Cozy at Home in the Family House, Episode 2, The Granny. When we left last week, Mr. Cozy had just opened the door. He was expecting Mr. Frobisher from next door and a neighbourly feud about a pair of pants. But unfortunately, it turned out to be Jack Nicholson with a chainsaw. Uh-oh. How's he going to sort this one out? Oh, bloody hell.
That's all I need. My bloody head cut off and my bloody body cavorting around like young Simon at one of his young person's discos. Darling, darling.
Yes, darling?
Well, don't just stand there, woman. Put my head back on.
There you are. All better now. But, darling, I thought that people who had had their heads cut off died.
Don't be stupid, darling. We're members of Booper. Besides, no one ever dies in this house.
Hello, father.
Ah, daughter.
Hello, father.
Hello, son. Haven't you got a bloody job yet?
Yes.
Damn. So there's nothing for me to be endearingly cross about.
Hello.
Oh, no. It's the senile grandmother.
I wonder what crazy antics the slightly dotty but ever so lovable old dear is going to get up to today. Oh, my God, she's put her head through a plate glass window.
Remember when she staged a dirty protest and smeared it all over the walls?
Yes, I shouldn't think we'll ever be allowed back to Lincoln Cathedral again.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Vicar.
Do tell your mother that the door to the vicarage is always open. Perhaps that might stop her coming through the window. She's ruining the stained glass.
I didn't know the glass was stained.
It is now. Sort of a red colour. Goodbye.
Granny, are you all right?
Of course I am, granddaughter. I'm a member of Booper. You don't think I'm senile, do you?
Of course not.
Well, you must be really stupid then. What have I put my hand in this boiling chip fat? Votes for women! Votes for women!
Granny, what about giving me some of that old advice about how to find the right man?
Oh, well, granddaughter, when I was a young woman, I had all the men chasing after me.
You must have looked very different then.
No, I've always had wrinkled old dugs and a hairy chin. The men were carrying rocks and shouting, "Burn the witch!"
Blimey, what on earth else is going to happen?
Well, once this crazy palaver is all sorted out, I should think Father's boss will ring up and ask Father out to play golf. And Father will get all flustered because he's much better at golf than his boss for some reason, which we won't know at first, but then it'll be revealed to us, and that'll be the punchline, and that'll be the end. That'll be him now.
Hello, boss.
Hello, Cozy. Coming out to play golf?
All right, sir.
Good. You know my handicap, don't you?
Yes. You haven't got any arms.
How on earth will Mr. Cozy, one-time winner of the US Masters, make his game crap enough to lose to a man who swings his clubs with his teeth? Find out in next episode of All Cozy at Home in the Family House.
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Joe Brand, Mark Thomas and Skint Video. The producer was Bill Dare.
Hello?
Is that the Mary Whitehouse Experience?
Yes.